Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody, coast to coast. This Week in America, Michael's Eyes by Robert W. Foster asked the question, what was the meaning of a miracle whereby a man born blind is given sight? And what was the meaning of the miracle man's death at the hands of the authorities? And why did some believe in God's purposes while others did not? Michael, the man born blind, goes on a search for answers with his wife's encouragement. After considering the miracles in both their lives, Michael and his remarkable wife arrive at their own conclusions. Robert Foster is a retired civil engineer, graduated from the University of Vermont in 1955, served in the U.S. Air Force, where he completed pilot training in 1958, practiced as a consulting engineer in the Framingham, Massachusetts area until his semi-retirement in 1992. In his retirement, he continues to provide consulting services in construction review, provides dispute resolution services, and writes frequently for technical publications. He lives in Hopkinton, Massachusetts. Michael's Eyes, called a heartwarming tale of faith, and author Robert Foster, our guest on This Week in America. Robert, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
This is a book so well done and receiving excellent reviews. I'm looking forward to our conversation. But first of all, let's start with, where did the idea come from to write this book? How did you decide I was going to write Michael's Eyes?
Well, you know, it's been a very interesting adventure for me. But what struck me, and I'm not a Bible scholar, but I do read, you know, from time to time, and I hear sermons from time to time. What struck me is that all through the New Testament, we have incidences of Jesus meeting people and changing their lives in various ways, by healing them, by giving them deaf people the ability to hear, by giving blind people the ability to see, and so on and so forth. But all of those people come and go very quickly in the accounts. They appear, Jesus does something to change their lives, and they kind of disappear. We never hear from them again.
Yes.
However, there's this one character in the 9th chapter of the Gospel according to John, who was born blind, spent all of his life as a beggar, standing by the side of the road with his little tin cup, and he becomes an adult doing that. It's all he does. It's all he's able to do. And one day, a man comes along, stranger, comes along with some other people, and they get into a discussion, and this man does something for the blind man, and the blind man walks off and follows instructions, and he goes to the pool of Siloam, and he washes this off of, some mud or something off of his eyes. He didn't know what it is. And suddenly he can see. And what's interesting about this man is there is several things about him that make him unique among all of the people we read about. And but one of the things that struck me and always strikes me as I read the account, because we do read that he's challenged by the Pharisees. And it just strikes me that, you know, as wonderful as that miracle must have been in this man's life, as it turns out, it caused some problems for him. For instance, he can no longer be a beggar. He's no longer blind. He can no longer be a beggar.
Yes.
But he has no schooling. He didn't learn to read, of course. He didn't have eyes to read. He has no preparation for life other than by begging, but now he can't be a beggar. So what does he... How does his life unfold? Well, we don't get that, of course, in the gospel. So as a sort of a thought experiment, I began thinking about it. Well, how could perhaps a man in that era survive? And if this person who healed him and gave him his sight was Jesus, and that's what we understand as we read the gospel, we don't assume that Jesus would just go off and leave him sort of to blunder along all by himself. So there must have been something, or there would be something that we would guess made it possible for this man to live a life. And that's what struck me. And I started thinking about that as a, like I say, like a thought experiment.
Yes.
And I put together a number of different ideas of how he might have gone on. And pretty soon I had a story. And as I filled that out and followed it through his life cycle, I finally decided to publish it. So that's where we got to the point where we have Michael's Eyes.
I love the background. The book is Michael's Eyes by Robert Foster. You'll find the book available at Amazon, all of the usual places. When you do something like this, was there any concern on your part that some people may think you maybe distorted the gospel, sort of presumptuous in interpreting a very important gospel account? Were those thoughts in your mind as you were developing the story?
They were in my mind, and I still think about that. Different people will read different things into the book. But I would just point out that in 1953, Hollywood made this marvelous movie, The Robe.
Oh, yes.
And about a centurion was there at the crucifixion of Jesus. And that was a popular movie, as I recall it. Of course, that's a long time ago, but I do remember 1953.
Yes.
And it gives me some assurance that the public will accept this sort of a story that is sort of builds out or builds upon the Gospels itself. So I haven't worried too much about that, and I haven't had anybody that confronted me on that issue.
Interesting, and maybe people have had the same thoughts you have had, and here you have taken this story and developed it into Michael's Eyes. Robert Foster, our guest on the program, mentioned in the background an engineer. We don't often think of engineers as scholars of popular fiction, especially on biblical subjects. And you mentioned you're not a biblical scholar. Have you been studying the Bible all your life?
Well, I'm not sure I can take credit for being a student so much as just a reader. I am a reader, and I've always enjoyed. I mean, you know, the Bible we consider to be one of the finest pieces of English literature ever published,
yes.
And certainly one of the most popular. And it is full of just wonderful, wonderful stories. As far as writing is concerned, I have no training in this type of writing. I did a great deal of technical writing in my career. I wrote for journals and bulletins on technical issues, both in having to do with civil engineering and land surveying and other in construction and various issues like that. But when it comes to fiction, this was an adventure for me, and I really did enjoy doing it. But that's all I can say about it. I don't have any particular expertise.
Robert Foster, our guest, his book is Michael's Eyes. You'll find it at all the usual places. Go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, link on to Robert's page on Amazon to get information and to order the book. You do such an excellent job of bringing Michael to life. We feel like we know him as we read of him. How were you able to describe what life was like for him as a blind man?
That was one of the challenges here. And I felt as I was reading this, I'm sorry, as I was writing this, that I had to create the person, the Michael, and describe a little bit what it was like for him. And trying to describe what blindness is like for someone who's born blind. Now, I've known people who were blind. I had a friend, an adult woman I knew several years ago who was blind, but she was not born blind. She lost her sight because of some sort of illness. And usually the people that we encounter, or at least the people that I have encountered, were not born blind. They became blind. That means if somebody becomes blind, let's say as a teenager, then the rest of their life they have a memory of what it was like to see. When people talk about the blue sky and the green grass, it means something to them. Michael, not having any experience of having eyesight, when he heard people talking about, oh, she's beautiful, what does that mean? Or look at the beautiful sunset tonight. It didn't say anything to him at all. He, for instance, on his way from his home to the road where he begged every day, he went with a stick, kind of tapping along, looking for holes in the road and avoiding trees and people and so on and so forth. And he was very careful in walking, and it was a slow business. But what amazed him was that everybody around him was hurrying along. They were rushing here and there, and he couldn't understand how that could be. And he said, he mentioned to his father, have these people so well memorized their routes every day that they can run? His father said, no. They can see. The point is that they can see so they can get to where they're going. And Michael says to him, what does that mean, they can see? Well, he had no way of understanding, nor did his father understand what it was like to be blind. And that was what I found difficult in trying to describe and, you know, flesh out the character of Michael.
Is there a central message or messages that you have in your book, Michael's Eyes?
Yes. As I went through it, I came across a number of different characters, of course, and through the various other books of the New Testament. And I also looked at my own experience in the world and with people. And I realized there's a good deal of ambiguity in faith, let's say faith. The question is, why do some people believe and why did other people not believe? And as I created the life for Michael, I visualized him sort of going on the road. Once he got his eyesight, now he wants to learn about the world. He wants to understand everything that's going on. He's starting 20 or 22 years late in his experiences. So he goes on the road to learn. And while he's doing that, he comes across people who either are surprised at his own miracle, his ability to see, or people who sort of disregard the whole thing and don't take it very seriously. One of my favorite characters in the book is an innkeeper, and Michael was on the road, and he stayed at an inn one night, in a country inn, and he got into a long discussion with the innkeeper, and it was the innkeeper who said, I'll believe in a miracle when one happens to me. And, you know, Michael had been talking about his own experience of his eyesight, and the innkeeper was not impressed. He says, I'll be a believer when it happens to me. And I think we see a good deal of that in the world around us today, that people are looking for something special. I myself do not believe that we come to faith because of a particular miracle. Otherwise, there wouldn't be very many of us in the church, I guess. But I think that this faith is something that's very, very personal, and it doesn't require miracles for people to come to faith. And that was the issue, you know, that I kept thinking of as I went through the book,
yes,
with creating different characters and how they responded to Jesus, but also to Michael and his apparent miracle.
The book by Robert Foster is Michael's Eyes. You'll find it at Amazon, the usual places. You've said that the blind man of chapter 9 of the Gospel of John is singular, unique among the many characters Jesus ministered to in the Gospels. Why is it? How is the blind man so special, do you think?
It's very, very interesting. If you look at some of the other, instances of Jesus healing people, as I said earlier, they kind of come and go. They appear, Jesus does what he does, and they're gone. We don't hear from them anymore. It's different with this character that I call Michael. And also, it's different because Michael did not ask to be healed. He didn't ask for his eyesight. There's another blind man further on in the book, Bartimaeus, and he, from the crowd watching Jesus or listening to Jesus, he cried out, oh, please, you know, give me my sight, and he was begging for it. And finally Jesus did and said, okay, you're healed because of your faith. Michael never called out to Jesus because he didn't know him and didn't see him, of course. didn't know anything about him, but Jesus appeared to Michael, and he did something, you know, miraculous there. But not only that, Jesus then had a sort of a philosophical discussion with his friends, his followers. And that, too, is something new. We don't see that in some of the other encounters. He explained, you know, because some of his followers said, why was this man born blind? Was it his sin or was it the sin of his parents? And, of course, the popular thinking was that if somebody was born blind, it was probably because his parents had some sort of a disease.
Yes.
And it was the sin of the parents. But the rabbi, Jesus, the Galilean, we refer to him mostly of the time, said, no, it's neither his sin nor the sin of his parents. This happened so that the work of God could be made known and it can be witnessed. And that is his explanation for his work and his presence, apparently, in the world. That's unusual too. And you know, when he saved the crippled man that they lowered through the roof so that he could lay his hands on him and cure him, there was no explanation. He didn't explain why he was doing that or why this all happened. And that's unusual. Of course, another thing about this that is unusual, excuse me, is that it wasn't all roses. When Michael got his sight, of course, he's confronted with, how am I going to live now? I can't live the way I always have. I've got to catch up with the rest of the world. Not only that, he's questioned by the Pharisees. They bring him in and they cross-examine him and they insist to know how this happened. Was he really blind? Maybe he wasn't really blind from birth. Maybe he was just some sort of a psychological thing. And they challenged him. And he's saying, I don't know how it was done. Well, who was the man? I don't know who he was. Where is he now? I have no idea. What does he look like? I was blind at the time. How would I know what he looked like? And there's that discussion between him and the Pharisees. But there's a problem. The Pharisees are denying that this Galilean going around the countryside is doing these wonderful things because it's a threat to them and it's a threat to their creed and their faith and their belief. And they even think it's a threat to the Old Testament. And besides, the Galilean gave Michael his sight on the Sabbath. And that was terrible. You're not supposed to work on the Sabbath. So, you know, again, we now learn some of the results of this particular miracle. And of course, the other thing that about Michael that is unusual, in my view, is the humor. There was actually humor in the discussion between him and the Pharisees, not on the part of the Pharisees, but on our part as we review that discussion, because they're obviously frustrated. They want Michael to disavow this Galilean. They want him to say something else. Oh, no, it wasn't him at all. He's not going to do that. He's just going to tell them exactly what happened. And they can't deal with the truth. And so the dialogue back and forth is actually, there's some humor in it. But those are, you know, the things that set Michael apart. We have a man with a personality, and we know something about his history. We wonder about his future. And when the Galilean explained to his followers that this happened so that the world could see the work of God in this man's life, it was those words, in this man's life, that grabbed me. And I said, what about his life? What could his life be?
Yes.
Or what could it develop into?
Well, you do an excellent job of answering that question. The time is going by so quickly. A few minutes left. We're talking with Robert Foster, author of the book Michael's Eyes. How is your own personal faith evidenced in the book?
It's interesting, you know, because they always say to fledgling writers, write what you know.
Yes.
One of my favorite authors for many, many years was Chaim Potok, a Jew who wrote about young people in the Hasidic movement. And I heard him interviewed once on radio. It wasn't, well, it might have been TV, I don't know. But he said that for him, writing is like self-analysis. He said, as I write, I discover myself. He said, I discover what moves me, and I discover my own deep feelings. And I discovered myself during writing this book that, in fact, yeah, that happens. At one point, Jesus, who becomes a melatid, a teacher of young boys, that's how he makes his living, finally. He becomes a teacher. And the boys challenged him one day, his small children challenged him about the account of the beginning of the world, what it says in Genesis. And, you know, they had some doubts. Could it really have been that way? And was Eve taken out of the rib cage of a man? How, you know, do you really believe that? And Jesus, Michael then instructs these young people, and he said, well, you have to understand that when Moses wrote those words, he had very little understanding of the things that we understand in our day and life, and he wrote allegorically. And so everything he wrote is in an attempt to explain the creation as it has come to him, as he has understood it. And he does it allegorically, but it is truth. The point is that what Moses was telling us in these stories about the beginning of the world, it is truth. And, you know, as I was developing Michael and his career and his work with young children, I realized, well, yeah, that's how I deal with it. That's how I have always dealt with some of the more difficult aspects of the Genesis account.
It's such a fascinating read, Michael's Eyes by Robert W. Foster. Going to take a minute or two here at the end to mention other books that Robert has written. Jonah, for example, Jonah's Judgment, written a few years ago. That's still available. If you go to Amazon, you'll get information there on that. Just let me ask you real quickly, does that book resemble or differ from what you've done with Michael's Eyes?
It differs quite a bit. I concentrate on one person, and that's Jonah. And I've got a kind of an axe to grind here, because I've always been a little irritated that if you talk about Jonah to anybody, they say, oh yeah, Jonah and the whale. The book of Jonah is not about a whale. And the incident with the whale is interesting, and we go on to it, but you go on by it. The book of Jonah is about God and his forgiveness of people. And Jonah is confronted with a whole city of, I don't know, something like 20,000 people. And it is a city full of sin, full of blasphemy, full of all the worst kinds of human behavior that's possible. And Jonah has to go there and tell them that the city is going to be destroyed if they don't straighten themselves out. Well, of course, Jonah didn't want them. He wanted the city to be destroyed.
Yes.
And he tried to run away. But the point is that in the end, the whole city cried out for forgiveness, and God forgave them. And that is the point, that God is willing to forgive even the worst of the blasphemies. That's the point of the book, not the thing about the whale.
And that book is Jonah's Judgment, and a new book published just a few weeks ago, Decisions. Talk about that. Is that another interpretation of a biblical subject? I've got about 30 seconds left here, but I want to talk about this because this is a fascinating concept as well.
No, this is a different. This is a contemporary story of a family difficulty over an abortion that was forced upon a young woman, and what happens in the family, and it all kind of torn apart. And the story is told by what else? A civil engineer, right? And and it goes through, it's a very contemporary issue because it involves also the development of land, which happens to be the civil engineers. That's his escape from the family problems is back into his business, which is the development of some land. But it's contemporary, and it's nothing like Michael's Eyes or Jonah's Judgment.
That's Decisions. That's now available. You'll find that again at Amazon, Jonah's Judgment. Robert just mentioned before that in the book, the focus of today's program conversation, Michael's Eyes by Robert W. Foster. Book, as I say, available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the usual places. Robert, time went by way too quickly. Fascinating conversation. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Well, thank you, Rick. I enjoy it. And of course, I love to talk about these books. I'm still enjoying them, even they're long gone. But thank you so much for bringing it out.
Such a nice job in writing and talking about it. The books are all available at Amazon. Michael's Eyes, information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.